Welcome to another episode of Behind the Headlines, where we feature experts and journalists discussing a variety of topics. I'm Terry Lipschitz, a senior producer for Lee and your host. In this latest episode, Haley Colombo, a reporter for Lee Enterprise's public service journalism team, talks about a story she's working on about PFAS, which are frequently referred to as forever chemicals and found in rivers, lakes, and streams. These chemicals make their way into drinking water and have been linked to numerous health problems. We discuss the story, efforts to filter out PFAS, and options people have to reduce exposure. Welcome, Haley, and thank you for joining the program.
Thanks for having me.
Can you give our listeners a brief history of some of the work you've done as a reporter?
Sure. I joined the Lee Enterprises public service journalism team last fall. Prior to that, I spent a long time covering business-related topics for business journals, including Columbus Business First and the Indianapolis Business Journal, and always covered, I guess, public affairs issues with a business lens.
Could you give a synopsis of the story that you're working on right now for the public service journalism team?
Yeah. So we took a look at the PFAS forever chemicals and how they impact New York drinking water systems. So the US EPA earlier this year released proposed regulations that would apply to the entire country that would cap the acceptable levels of two PFAS chemicals in drinking water. And those chemicals are pretty ubiquitous chemicals that have been used for decades in manufacturing of things like Teflon pans, nonstick, waterproof applications. They're in firefighting foam, but basically, there are these chemicals that have been used in the manufacturing of just like everyday household products, and as well as like some other kind of industrial applications, but they've been shown to essentially be human carcinogens. There's been an increasing amount of research that has shown that these chemicals contribute to, kidney and testicular cancer, liver disease, reproductive issues, fetal growth issues. So they're pretty harmful chemicals that we unfortunately have been exposed to in products as well as in our drinking water. So we decided to take a look at how PFAS chemicals impact New York drinking water, because New York was one of the first states to put in regulations on these chemicals in drinking water. But their rules that they have in place are less stringent than what the EPA is proposing. So there's a lot of people in New York who kind of live in the gap, essentially where their water is unsafe at the level that, the EPA now says, but they're not getting treatment for these chemicals in their drinking water systems because it doesn't reach New York's standard for what's considered to be too much of these PFAS chemicals.
And just to be clear, PFAS are very difficult to avoid, right? I mean, you and I, very likely, if we were to be tested right now, would probably show some level in our bloodstream, correct?
Correct. These chemicals are pretty ubiquitous. There's been studies that have shown that they're in pretty much all of our bodies, and they bioaccumulate over time. So that's why it matters that if someone is in a really, has a high concentration of these chemicals in their drinking water, it, can add up in their systems over time. And they're known as forever chemicals because they don't leave our system very quickly. They take a long time to leave our system. So that's what makes them dangerous, essentially, is that there's really no way to avoid them. Like, for instance, if you wanted to buy all organic fruits and vegetables or something at the store because, you wanted to make that choice for a health reason or something like that, or you didn't want to, have any soy in any of your food or something like that, you could figure that out. You can do that. With PFAS, you can't. And a lot of drinking water systems across the U.S. don't even test for this yet. New York is actually, at least they do already test for this, at least two of the main chemicals. So they have this baseline understanding of what is in the water already. But essentially, what we're finding is that if the EPA rule is going to affect, a lot more drinking water systems will need to remediate. That will, affect taxpayers and, anyone who drinks the water, which is, 95% of New Yorkers rely on public water systems.
You mentioned the gap that's there and some folks that are kind of caught in the middle here. What's the reasoning behind that? Is it water utilities? Are they slow to react? Is it a financial issue? Is it just the science is changing? And as you said, not all places are necessarily testing. So what exactly is the problem with getting this remedied?
It's kind of all of the above. It's all of those things are coming into play. In New York, they have a maximum contaminant level of 10 parts per trillion for these two main PFAS chemicals. The EPA standard that they're proposing nationwide to be the rule is 4 parts per trillion for these chemicals. And so, as you can imagine, there's a lot of water systems that are, they're somewhere between that. Maybe they've tested for 6 parts per trillion, but maybe they only have enough money to kind of do the necessary remediation for chemicals that they have to do something about, or the necessary upkeep. A lot of these water systems are kind of trying to keep the lights on in some respects. Like, not all of them have resources to do this kind of, modern remediation. There's a lot of larger water systems that have, Monroe County, New York, was one that we talked with, who they have already installed this technology to remove PFAS, but they have 500,000 people who use their water system. There are water systems that are just, over a dozen people, but they don't really have the funds they're not professionally managed in the same way to install this kind of treatment. So for some of these water systems, it's going to take the state laws changing for the people served by them to actually receive treatment, because they're at this point, that's just, it's not a priority for them.
You mentioned the EPA, the federal government, might put into effect rules that would set a higher standard, supersede state regulations. Where do those stand right now in that effort?
They've been proposed. They are getting public comment right now. They want to have the rule finalized by the end of the year, but it wouldn't necessarily mean that it would, go into effect at the end of the year. There's likely going to be litigation over this rule, because these are the first drinking water standards in quite a long time that the EPA has proposed. And there's extensive pushback from the chemical manufacturing industry and even some others like water suppliers who are kind of saying, whoa, if you put this, if you put these rules into place, like, that's going to have a major impact on us. So it's anyone's guess as to when this will actually go into effect. But it's that question that environmentalists have brought up now. It's like, well, we know now that the EPA says this should be the standard, or this is what's unsafe. And so whether or not this is a rule that's in effect nationally, it just informs, what you think about your own drinking water. If you're drinking water that, say is at 6 parts per trillion for one or both of these chemicals, you're not feeling as good about it as you were maybe before these EPA standards came out, or this EPA proposed rule came out, because you're realizing, whoa, the EPA says that this is too high.
So in the meantime, if you're someone that lives in an area that might have elevated levels or what would be considered unsafe, does this mean you have to stop drinking the water? What can you do as a resident to kind of help take steps on your own?
I think it's really tough that residents would be in a situation where they have to kind of make some of these, you know, decisions on their own, because it is hard to know. I mean, if you were a person of, you know, in good health and you have a slightly elevated level, and you're not, you know, necessarily predisposed to a bad outcome, do you decide that it's okay? I think that based on some of, you know, the conversations I've had with scientists, I think that seems reasonable. Although I'm not a doctor, I think that you would have to like talk with your doctor to see if it's a risk that would warrant you either putting a water filter on your water or getting, you know, a specific kind of, you know, water pitcher that can filter out these PFAS. Just what I would do if I was living in a place that had a high concentration of these PFAS chemicals, I would certainly look into filtering the water just to be sure, you know, especially if you are in a sensitive group, if you're immunocompromised, if you are pregnant, or if you are a nursing mom. Those are all cases that would warrant, you know, maybe trying to avoid short-term exposure to this. But at the same time, you don't want to like scare people into doing something that would be even more unsafe, like not drinking any water or something like that. I think that the answer is to contact your water supplier, ask them what their thoughts are on the levels, contact your, you know, your physicians and ask them about it. And if you want to be, you know, super cautious about it, install some sort of filter if you can afford that.
All right, Haley, I really appreciate you taking some time to talk about this. It's a fascinating subject and one that I imagine will remain in the news for some time.
Absolutely. Thanks, Terry.
We hope you enjoyed this latest episode of Behind the Headlines. You can find us on every podcast platform, and we'd love it if you could take a moment to subscribe and leave a review. Finally, if you appreciate what we're doing with this program, we encourage you to invest in local journalism by supporting the newspaper in your community. I'm Terry Lipschitz, thanking you so much for listening to Behind the Headlines from Lee Enterprises.